there are overwhelming, turbulent times, but that also means there is major potential to fill the cracks with new ideas and to transform these destructive systems. There are specific root causes for problems and holistic solutions everywhere. There is room for prosperity, there is room for regeneration and a shift in values. Another reality is possible, and that's what we're exploring here today. Welcome to Sage Talking.
My name is Kim Benson, and I am a teacher in a community called Squamish on the unceded territory of the Squamish Nation. I'm an elementary school teacher. I have four kids who are now adults. So this work is important to me because of, you know, the future for our children, my own children, children of the world. So I've come to this work inspired by that.
My name is Jillian McGuire, and I'm a teacher in the Vancouver School District. I live on Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh territory, occupied territory. And I teach English and psychology and sometimes yoga at a high school in Vancouver, Kitsilano Secondary.
Oh, that's lovely. They have the option for yoga. That's so nice. That's really cool. What type of yoga do you teach?
All types. We introduced the program several years ago because of the real increase in kids suffering from anxiety. I was getting more and more, you know, notes in my letterbox or in my inbox about kids who, were having panic attacks, anxiety, were having trouble focusing, all these kinds of things. And I think a lot of that is probably related to climate anxiety, and, you know, starting to realize that the kids' future is really under threat right now. So we started to do, some yoga and mindfulness work to deal with those emotions.
I love that. That's a really holistic view on things. Thank you so much. Jillian, why don't you go first and explain a little about what BCTF Divest Now is, which is going to be our main topic today, and also what motivated you to be part of it.
So BCTF Divest Now is a campaign that Kim and I started, I guess it's almost a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
When we both found out how seriously invested the BC Teachers Pension Plan is in fossil fuels and infrastructure corporations. So the BCTF as a union has its own funds responsibly divested. They've divested a while ago. But this is the BCTPP, which is the part of the pension plan that's run by the BC government. And so we figured, okay, let's get to work on getting us out of these irresponsible investments that are completely destroying our students' future. And we thought it would be, you know, we thought we would get buy-in from the executives because we're all teachers. We all claim to be teachers first. We have had very little success getting Clint Johnson to engage, or really anybody on the executive. So we just sort of forged ahead with this campaign. So far it's been a lot of, we've done some webinars for teachers. We have had a pretty strong social media campaign. I even ran for BCTF president to, you know, bring this, this issue to the forefront, made a speech about it. And teachers really did start talking about divestment, but we're still not getting any response from Clint or the other table officers. So we're really quite disappointed, but, you know, we're kind of figuring out where to go next and how to, you know, save the future for these kids that didn't cause this problem at all. And we should not be in any way invested in the destruction of their future.
Yeah, totally agree on that, and it's great that you feel so strongly about that. I think divesting is a huge topic and issue, because obviously where money flows, energy goes there, and and basically in those issues, it's money runs the world. So if you take money away from something, you're kind of taking away its power. So I think that's really especially important. Also in this political and environmental climate. Kim, do you want to add on to that and maybe explain a little more about what BCTF is, what it stands for, and also why you believe in it?
Right. So thank you. The approach of our divestment campaign is broad, and we want to bring what's going on and what our pension investments are in to the public, because other teachers don't even know what we're invested in. So we're having to educate other teachers in the province, and there's about 50,000 teachers in British Columbia, and many of them don't even know what companies we're invested in, and families need to know. And so our approach is we are a courageous group of people who just want to talk the truth and make the people accountable. And certainly with our union, teachers voted. First of all, teachers have been working trying to divest from fossil fuels from our pension for over a decade. And since Jillian and I started this, for 2 years in a row, teachers voted on motions at our annual general meeting to divest from fossil fuels. And literally falling on dead ears. Our union president, Clint Johnston, did absolutely nothing with regards to taking any action on our motions. And we have yet to hear from him if he's done anything since the last motion was passed a few months ago. I truly believe that by talking about this openly and having transparency and educating the people as to what our pension is invested in, that will help the movement.
Maybe Jillian, you could also add on to that and quickly clarify. I don't know if it's different in different countries. Since you're in Canada right now, how exactly does your pension and that of other teachers, how does that work? Why is it important? Where exactly are those pensions, and in which hands are they? So maybe you could explain a little further what you're trying to do or what you're trying to generate more awareness about.
Okay, well, first of all, every public school teacher in British Columbia gives at least 11% of every paycheck to the BC Teachers' Pension Plan, which is a division of British Columbia Investments Corporation, which is set up by the government. So that's mandated. You have to pay that 11%, and it has to go into that fund. Now, I'd just like to go back to what you said a little while ago about money. At the BCTF AGM, after we passed the divestment motion and teachers voted once again to direct Clint to take some action on this, I was talking to a number of teachers and people who were attended the AGM, who had been attending the AGM for many years and worked on the tobacco divestment campaign, which was successful. We finally got divested from big tobacco, and they said it was exactly the same. There were the same reasons. We want to be able to engage these corporations so that they can be more responsible. But of course, you can't engage a tobacco company out of producing tobacco, just like you can't engage an oil company out of producing oil. This is what they do. What I have been told, so I talked to who is the guy? Tom Salazar from what company is that, Kim, in the States, the nonprofit, the divestment company?
I'm not sure. Are you talking about AIFA? No.
Yeah, I'm talking about AIFA. Yeah, so
Okay, yeah.
AIFA.
So that's
So
the
Tom,
institute. the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis.
Yeah, and I think it's Tom Sanzillo, I think is his name. And so he's really knowledgeable and worked, and he said that he worked on divestment campaigns for tobacco in the States back in the day. And he said this should be easy because the tobacco companies were making tons of money. He said, but these oil companies, they're not even making any money. Like, it's not even a good investment. It's a terrible investment. It's going to be very quickly stranded assets. And he said, this should be a slam dunk. He's like, but it's just not happening because, what I'm thinking is that because Canada is such an extractivist country, we're so addicted to our fossil fuel production that we just really can't see the forest for the tree. Well, what forest is left? And we just don't see any other way. And all of our systems are caught up in protecting this dying industry. And, you know, we would really like our BCTF leadership, specifically Clint Johnson, who is the president, to be brave enough to come out and say, look, we need to put our children's future ahead of protecting the interests of big oil in this country.
Yeah, it definitely 100%. And interesting that you also said that that in Canada, you're so addicted to fossil fuels, or let's say government and corporations, which I think, oil corporations, oil and gas, they're addicted to fossil fuels, obviously, everywhere. But I think it's interesting because in Europe, often let's say a little bit of the prejudice about Canada is that it has, incredible wildlife and pristine nature, which I guess generally it does, or it did, like many other countries as well, but that it still is, the norm today, and also that you don't hear a lot of bad things about Canada, obviously now right now with the fires and, the climate crisis just, devastating the country. Yeah. You're hearing a lot more, but that obviously old growth logging is also such a huge topic right now, which is crazy because, like, for example, in Germany, it couldn't even really be a topic because there is not much old growth here left anyway. And Canada still...
There's not much left here. I think BC is down to 2.7% of the remaining old growth, and we're still cutting it down.
So there's not much here either.
But I would also like to say that we are BC, British Columbia Investments Corporation, is actually doubling down on these companies, and the Quebec Pension Fund is divesting, and BC is buying the funds that Quebec is ditching.
Interesting. How exactly did that come to be? Maybe Kim, you can elaborate on that a little.
But basically, to understand what that is, and that's one of the topics of conversation, which is that when fossil fuel assets are dropped and some organization divests, it's possible they can be picked up by other. Other organizations. And in this particular case, our pension managers picked those up because our pension managers, BCI, wants to continue investing in fossil fuels. They are a fossil fuel giant. This organization invests in all kinds of planet killing companies, including, and they invest 11 public pensions, including ours. I'll just tell you some of them. We're invested in TC Energy, which is Coastal GasLink, which is a company they're working underneath on Wet'suwet'en territory and drilling underneath a river there, a pristine river that is non-polluted called the Wet'suwet'en. And they don't have permission to be there. They are on sovereign land. Then we have Enbridge. So for TC Energy, we're invested $81 million. We're invested in Enbridge for $43 million. ExxonMobil, we're invested for $19.9 million. Chevron, 10 million. ConocoPhillips, that's the Willow Project in Alaska, 4 million. Imperial Oil, that's in the Alberta tar sands, we're invested 3.2 million. And we're also invested in horrific companies like Nestle. We're invested in Nestle India for 3.9. We're invested in a meat company, factory farming pigs for, called WH Group for 20 million. And we all know what the animal industry is doing to the environment as well. So they have us invested in horrific companies that are just maintaining the status quo and contributing to climate breakdown.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's just absolutely horrible. That also with an essential job as being a teacher, that once again, you know, you're the money that you're making and the fact, you know, that there is a mandatory kind of pension fund you're paying into, that you have basically, or you are given not much control or really no control at all of where basically your money and your energy, which money essentially is also just, you know, energy we put into something, we get money out of it, and then like paying taxes, we have no control over where it's going. So I think raising awareness about this topic is really, really important, and I can imagine that not many people actually know about this. Maybe Jillian, you could or talk about some of the responses you have gotten from teachers that maybe weren't aware of this. Are the responses when you're trying to raise awareness about it, are they very positive? Are they shocked? Are they negative and disinterested? What are other teachers saying about this when you're spreading awareness?
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty horrified.
Well, that's good.
Right? But it's, you know, every time we speak to anybody, you know, the first time I brought it up with Clint at, he was doing a union workshop, and he was, you know, came to make a speech, and I asked about it. And he said, oh yeah, it's impossible. It's, we don't have any control over it. And we have now tried to reach out several times, and Stand.Earth and Oil Sands Divest and Shift.org have all offered to walk our BCTF executive through the divestment process and give suggestions on how we could get this done, like the Quebec Public Pension Plan did, and they just won't get back to us. So I think teachers are, you know, are really horrified. And I don't know if Kim knows how many people have signed so we have a petition, and we also have, we had a letter that all teachers could send to our executive. And, you know, every teacher I spoke to was more than willing to send that letter. So there's been a lot of lobbying by teachers to our executive, and they're just showing absolutely no interest in getting any education on how to move forward with this process. And we have a lot of resources for them. We have all the help that they need, but for some reason, and I'm not sure what that reason is, yeah, Clint is just not interested in investigating the process any further.
Yeah.
Despite 2 motions being passed directing him to move forward with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it sounds familiar. It sounds like many other stories out there, unfortunately. Maybe Kim, you could talk a little bit about, because on the website, for example, it says about BCTF Divest Now. We are teachers calling on the British Columbia Teachers Federation pension plan to immediately divest from holdings in fossil fuels. So some people may ask, you know, have you thought about, or Kim, maybe there is something in your mind, or that you and Jillian have talked about, or other ideas in the room, what would you like to invest, or where would you like your money to go? Are there specific funds or projects that you would say you really would like to direct your money there, or is it mostly away from fossil fuels and, let's say, maybe other very negative impact holdings?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. I'm right now accumulating, I've just begun to accumulate some companies that as examples that we can invest in. But in general, the first motion that we passed 2 years ago was, you know, calling on divestment, but to reinvest in sustainable, renewable, low energy organizations and companies. And they are out there. We just need to take the money from oil, coal, and gas and put it into these companies so we can rebuild the world in the kind of world that we need. And so, yeah, no more planet, human, or animal destroying companies. We just can't do that anymore.
Yeah. I'm just asking because I feel, you know, especially if you bring an idea into the world, I guess if there's a specific, you know, also thought behind, okay, maybe you've thought about a specific fund or holdings that you find very interesting where you said we would take our money and put it there. Or is, let's say, the basically what you're working on right now still in the, like, let's say, beginning stages that you're saying, with all the other teachers who are in this, with other voices, we're going to figure out where to put that money once we get this kind of underway and we're going to a next step.
Well, Jillian, did you want
to? No, that's it. Well, I was just going to say that we do have a number of experts that we've been in touch with, shift.org, Oil Sands Divest, and IEFA, and they have, you know, a ton of resources for us and some really great people working on this who, you know, they seem incredibly knowledgeable and they have a lot of advice for us, and they are perfectly willing to work with Clint and the BCTPP board to find those companies that are responsible. But I did dig out the fossil fuel companies that we're buying from Quebec. So it appears that BCI has bought the Quebec Public Pensions divested oil and gas company Corex Resources in 2022, and also $15.5 billion a national gas deal in the UK just a few months ago. So those are just two examples of what Quebec is ditching and we are actually buying. And the other thing that's really important to note is that BCI has no Indigenous rights policy. So that's a huge problem in 2023 in so-called Canada, while we are, you know, publicly saying that we're committed to reconciliation, but our major government-run pension corporation has no Indigenous rights policy.
That's interesting. That's interesting to note. Also, just for people who are not in BC or in Canada at all, could you clarify what BCI stands for? Just so everybody knows.
It's British Columbia Investments Corporation.
Yeah. Okay. So as you both as teachers, I would like to ask you from the teaching education side, maybe Kim, you can start, and then Jillian, you can share your thoughts on this. Amongst your students, how is the awareness about the climate crisis? How widespread is maybe eco or climate anxiety, as it's called? Do you feel that for your students it's a big topic, or still not enough awareness?
So for me, I am an elementary school teacher. So what I notice is that students have no awareness, the young ones have no awareness at all of what's happening on the planet, which I think is a huge failing of our education system. So young the young ones don't really know anything. But for the older kids that I'm exposed to, like I often go into grades fives and sixes, I hear comments like, we're all going to die. It doesn't matter anyways. We're all going to die. Those kinds of things. So, and I've had them do some writing projects once, you know, I've read books on, you know, old growth forests, or I talk about or read books on, you know, plastics in the ocean, etc. And you have kids in their writing say things like, we have to save the world, we can do it. I've saved copies of that and of those, of that writing. And, you know, young children have a hope that we can do things better. And we're just failing them by not talking about it and then by doing nothing. And so as a teacher, I'll just segue to that. As a teacher, I am extremely frustrated and mortified that our union and our president, Clint Johnson, is doing absolutely nothing. When teachers on the front lines of our students are hearing them express these concerns or have no knowledge. Well, yeah. That's
yeah,
my
I can understand that so much. And I feel, I mean, when I look back at my time in school, all levels, whether it was elementary school, whether it was later on in secondary schools, that really, because at that time I wasn't aware at all. And then coming out of school and educating myself and being exposed to different influences, different experiences, and really learning about what's going on in the world, I felt that kind of my time in school and academics have not just not talked about it, but it actively leaves out so much of real world knowledge and awareness that it's, you know, it feels like you come out of school and you're prepared for nothing. And I kind of had to educate myself. So I'm actually also working on getting, you know, workshops and education about climate crisis into schools near where I live, which is extremely hard. But I'm on that exactly because of what you just said, Kim, that either kids or students in general, younger people, they don't really have an awareness for what's going on, or they're feeling completely scared and overwhelmed, and they don't know exactly what we can do and what maybe politics, what the adults in their lives, authorities are supposed to do to have a positive impact and to actually change things for the better. So, Jillian, maybe you could talk about your experience on this. Which grades are you teaching?
I'm teaching high school, and my experience is similar to Kim. Like, the kids know that we are in a climate crisis. When I give a creative writing assignment to the kids, over half write about an apocalyptic future due to climate change. They know, and they also know that most adults are doing absolutely nothing. And, you know, I do think it's probably time for us to do something more than just talk about this. And I'm noticing what's going on in the UK right now with Just Stop Oil. All these average people and a lot of older retired people are actually out on the streets, slow marching. They're putting themselves up for arrest. I've seen all sorts of people in the UK out on the streets. They're disrupting Wimbledon. They're disrupting business as usual, and they're risking arrest for this. The other day I saw an older woman who was in a wheelchair or one of those like little motorized scooters, because she clearly had mobility issues, and they were putting her into the police wagon. These are really brave people who are disrupting life as usual to demand the end to all new oil and gas licenses in the UK. I just don't think that, you know, given Kim and I have been working on this for 2 years, and this should be really easy, a really easy ask, and it's not. While, you know, Northeast Spain is like, cars are being catapulted down the road because of flooding. that should have been a really easy ask, and it's not. So obviously we're going to have to get more disruptive so that the powers take us seriously and that we show the kids that the adults are doing something. Like, all these kids want to see is that the adults in their life are actually doing something to give them a future. And once we show them that, I think that will lift a lot of their anxiety.
Yeah. And I both think it's so lovely to hear that you recognize your responsibility and are also openly, you know, voicing the desire for a change also in the education system, because I find one of the big problems is also that if kids, you know, we're so influenced also when we're still children by our parents, the opinions of our parents and the adults around us, and if they don't know and if they don't have the awareness, or they're maybe even telling their kids in the worst case, it's a hoax, don't worry about this, then, you know, the next place where children are going to be influenced is at school. And if at school there is education lacking or nobody talks about it and there's no safe place for also children to feel they're heard and where they can maybe process their emotions about these topics, I mean, that just leads also next to, let's say, kids being increasingly focused on social media, not having enough exposure to nature, real life skills, etc. I think also all of this frustration, anxiety, as you mentioned before, is just adding to really a mental health crisis and an epidemic of mental illnesses, which is something that I think we see every day, and that I definitely see every day.
I would like to say, though, that I do, teachers are teaching about climate change. The science teachers at my school are teaching climate change and what is happening. But the way that we're teaching it is we're making records of all of the destruction. And that's the education system's job, is to educate students about what's going on in the world, what is changing. It's the system's fault that our leaders are not doing anything about it. So do we teach our kids about civil resistance? Do we teach our kids how to, you know, say no to the system, how to refuse to enter the school until the adults take some action? Is this what we do? I don't know. I don't know how else we could address this as an education in the education system if we don't have any buy-in from our politicians, who have obviously been co-opted by the oil and gas industry and all of the extraction industries. You know, the parents who may have jobs in these extraction industries. You know, we're looking at the prison industrial complex that is fully, the court system is fully tied up in this. They're putting activists in prison. I went to pick up an activist from prison yesterday. Like, this is somebody, a young person who has been protesting, right? And it really, really frustrates me that we're putting these people in prison rather than, you know, hailing them as heroes, the heroes that they are.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, Kim, I also want you to touch on this in a second. And Jillian, 100%. And I'm not saying that teachers are the problem here. I'm saying it's also the education system, which is obviously tied to, politics and economic system, because it is generally what prepares people for, you know, going into work, going into different corporations. For example, what I could also see, at least in Germany, my schooling, academics was very geared towards me going into a company and basically working behind a computer and just being, let's say, kind of indoctrinated into a capitalistic system, not thinking outside the box, not learning real life skills. And at the end of the day, teachers at the same time in one occupation, there are 100,000 different faces, opinions, backgrounds. There might be one teacher that really tries to listen to their kids, to give them support, to do everything they can, as obviously both of you are doing. And I guess, everybody in each occupation is just doing their best. And then on the other hand, there are teachers maybe who don't have the awareness themselves. You know, teachers as nurses, doctors, any other occupation are just, you know, people. And I do understand that also, you know, political support and also, you know, reforming entire education and school systems, which are not singular systems, you know, they're tied to the country's values, they're tied to economic systems, etc. So I understand it's also not a, it's not a linear question. There's not one answer how you can change this around, how you can give students different support. So maybe Kim, from your side, you can share some thoughts on kind of the education system in Canada or what you're seeing as a teacher.
The education system in Canada is imperialistic and colonial. It is archaic, and it is not, as a system, engaged in reconciliation. So what I mean by that is that, you know, what students are learning and how they're learning it is not working for the world that we live in right now. So what has to happen is, and I just want to point out that we at least in my experience, from kindergarten to grade six, we are talking and spend more time on Easter, St. Patrick's Day, and leprechauns, and Santa Claus than we do more of what's happening in the world today. I've been in trouble for talking about climate change in the classroom. And I, in fact, had a vice principal in my district tell me, quote, "Kids don't want to learn about climate change."
Yeah, it's insane. Okay.
So what do we do? We absolutely have to teach our kids how to go out and protest. We absolutely have to teach our kids to stand up for what is right here, because it's a survival mechanism. The leaders and government are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. They have abandoned their duty to people and planet. It's very evident that they are simply an extension of corporate rule and industry interest. So how do we teach our children to survive? We have to teach them how to stand up for life on Earth. And unfortunately, they're going to have to join the adults. And it is not their responsibility to do this. It's us. It's our responsibility.
Yeah.
Well, what the education system needs to do across these lands, so-called Canada, is we need to have all teachers mandated. We need to have time to teach teachers all about the status of the earth and what's going on. And then we need to change curriculum so that cross curricular, we can talk about everything that is that's going on in the world and how the systems of oppression like capitalism and colonialism and white supremacy, those systems are contributing to ecological collapse of our earth's systems.
Yeah, so I guess.
Yeah, and how the fossil fuel industry has infiltrated every single thing we do and how we live on this planet. We are actually dependent on it. We need to teach what has happened, the state of our earth, and then we need to teach them what we can do about it. They yeah. need to know the truth, and then they need to know what we are going to do about it.
Yeah.
So one of my students, in his little writing, he's in grade two, he said, "I think that there is a problem. It can always be solved. Some people are helping and some people are destroying. No more destroying, more helping." Now, that just says it all, right?
Yeah.
Very common sense approach. Children know what the adults need to do.
We also lose so much touch of maybe how we used to think when we were really young. And I think we give little kids too little credit sometimes about what they really, you know, gather from what's going on, what they notice, what they think, how they process this information, and also how they're not, you know, in their own little world, but they do, you know, catch kind of what's going on. They feel how adults around them are acting on and reacting to different situations. And I also want to know, on that note, maybe Jillian, you can touch on that first. You know, I mean, in the U.S. right now, teachers are, for example, we know all about gun violence, and teachers are kind of preparing or being prepared in certain ways for an event when there's another school shooting, for example. And in Canada now, in the last few years, you've had some crazy fossil fuel induced environmental disasters, and the climate crisis really just snowballing. And recently, also with all the fires again, are there events or have you had to prepare as a teacher or react in a situation where there was an environmental disaster nearby, a fire unfolding or something like that?
No, we spend all our time preparing for, we do have fire drills, obviously, but we spend more time on the administrative side. We spend more time on the emergencies, you know, that used to be a danger. Well, actually, a school shooting has never been a danger in British Columbia. There's never been a school shooting in British Columbia, but we still do lockdown drills that, you know, US style lockdown drills. I don't really know why we do them. They cause so much anxiety in students, in already anxious students. And we're at an administrative level, we're definitely not doing any kind of drills around climate. And in the schools, you really don't see much evidence of any kind of sustainability goal. We still have, you know, vending machines full of plastic water bottles. We have very, you know, I think all of our garbage all goes to the same place. Because it gets contaminated, the composting gets contaminated so easily. There's very little talk about how to run a sustainable school. So although teachers are talking about climate change and, you know, we do have courses on ecology, the systems are not doing what they need to do because everybody, it's like everything, right? Everybody is just doing their job. And looking to, you know, get their daily tasks done. And that's not what we're looking for from adults anymore. What we need from adults is for them to not just care about their children, you know, going to school and getting into university and getting a job. That's not a realistic future anymore. What we need the adults to be caring about is giving our children the future that they deserve. And that's going to require a huge mindset change from parents. Like any parents, any teachers listening to this need to seriously sit down and think, what can I do to ensure that my child has a future? And it's going to involve people getting out of their comfort zone and rethinking the jobs that they're doing, rethinking the political actions that they're taking. And we need to really come together and, yeah, get out of our comfort zone and do the work that's needed to give our children that future.
Getting out of the comfort zone, and also because it's obviously a very confronting topic, Kim, I want to ask you, in your experience, especially since you're also dealing with younger children, have you had specific reactions from parents or colleagues about, you know, your part in BCTF Divest Now, and also, you know, your talking about climate change in the classroom? Could you elaborate on that a little?
Okay, well, that there's been diverse reactions from people and my colleagues when I talk about climate change. So, like you said earlier, you know, many people are going to have different opinions, but I've talked to some teachers who don't want to engage in that conversation about the climate. But that can come from a variety of different reasons. It's a terrifying thing to realize and understand. And so some people are uncomfortable talking about it. It doesn't mean that they don't, you know, they're not aware, but they just don't want to talk about it. Other teachers I've spoken to, especially younger teachers, have told me they're choosing not to have children because of what's happening. Parents, you know, I think we need to, you know, educate people a bit more. But again, in my exposure, there hasn't been a lot of parents where I live who engage in that conversation either. So I think we're still failing at educating people, or I don't know. I also think that it's so scary that people are like, they don't want to deal with it. But I think that everybody also needs to understand there's so much doom and gloom conversation, and it is scary. But we can change this. We can turn it around, is what I'm saying. And I think the more people hear that we can turn this around, once we, you know, stop, you know, the oil and gas burning and let it sort of like die out. I think it's about 20 years. If we stop today, it would probably take about 20 years for the planet to slow down the heating, and then giving it time to stabilize. Like, that's actually a possibility. So I feel that when we talk about climate change, we also or the climate catastrophe, we also need to talk about what's possible, and yeah, that it's doable. But
yeah, in
my mind right now, it's going to involve mass mobilization, that thousands and millions of people are going to have to hit the streets.
100%. And also what you've touched on is yes, of course we can do it if we chose today and we change specific things. But I think this is what also is lacking in the conversation, is not just the we can do this, we can change this around, we have the power. It's the okay, look at where you're at. What does the place where you're at need? And not just in a global conversation, but also the more local conversation, looking at your landscape, looking at the nature around you. How is it, you know, how are maybe different ecosystems breaking down? What can you do? What can communities together do to become, let's say, autonomous, to start a community regenerative agriculture, to have decentralized renewable energies, you know, specifics like that. And also saying, you know, school would be a great place. That is what I would love to see in the future, to kind of say, and educating, you know, students on with a holistic mindset, a regenerative mindset, a mindset connected to nature. And on that note, I also want to ask you, Jillian, because that is something I'm also extremely passionate about. How are you finding, if you're also saying, you know, high school is where you're teaching, how is exposure to the internet, and really in some cases, social media or phone addiction that many younger people have today, how is that maybe influencing what they know, how they're acting, or rather not acting on this crisis? And some people are kind of truly paralyzed by all the, you know, global, the influx of natural disasters and crises and you know, negative news that they're seeing all day.
These are symptoms of a society that's quite sick, and these are still children. And you know, the fact that we're plugging them in to these devices so that we can ignore their needs is to me just a sign of a really irresponsible group of adults. And I guess what I'd like to bring it back to is that this is ultimately about just one tiny part of our responsibility. And what we're asking is for the adults in the room to stand up and be responsible.
Mental well-being, education systems, economic systems, governments and governing, it's all, you know, you can't deal with one thing in isolation. So, you know, when people are also asking, why are teachers caring about divestments? Because it's all interconnected. You can't,
right,
you know, just touch on one thing and hope that the rest takes care of itself. So, as you said, it's a general sick system and society you have to deal with, and there are many different aspects. Now, maybe last questions, which I want to direct at you first, Kim, to answer this, please. What are maybe, to end this kind of on a positive, empowering note, what are things that you are seeing that are happening or that you're working on, or wishes that you have for the future, specific things that in your mind or in your area where you're living, to make it specific, would have a positive impact, would empower people, would go into the direction of what you want to see in the future regarding people and planet?
We are invested in three companies up in northern British Columbia, fossil fuel companies who are fracking there. And so, I don't know, I'm supporting out here some organizations that are working at stopping this project from coming to our community. So there's a lot of hope there. And they've been working really hard together with the Indigenous community. And that is showing some really positive changes. And so that's encouraging. As well, I'm working on a project that involves some kinds of curriculum and teaching about climate change for students K-6. That helps me, and I feel that that's going to be something that's going to be useful. And I'm publishing a book right now about a little girl who goes through the forest and comes across a clear cut. So I'm excited about that project, and I'm looking forward to using that picture book in classrooms.
I think it's nice that you, as a teacher, and I'm also asking this, you know, both of you, because many people, they maybe want to do something, they feel they have this vision or they want to contribute to a better world, but they don't know how to, they haven't found yet what they're wanting to do. So I think it's just nice of you, you know, to share what you're doing in your personal lives and how you're putting, you know, your vision and what you want, how you're actually putting it to action. So thank you for your efforts, Kim and Jillian. What is something you're doing, or what are some hopes and wishes that you have for the future?
Well, I am interested in working with, there's a new campaign starting in Canada called Onto Ottawa. And what we're doing is we're traveling from British Columbia, from so-called British Columbia, to the capital city to demand that our government create a citizens' assembly to deal with climate change. It's become very obvious that our governments are co-opted by the extractivist corporations. And so a citizens' assembly is almost structured like a jury of people's peers. So people selectedly, randomly selected, so should be representative of the population at large. They get the information and then they give the government direction on how to immediately start dealing with this crisis that we're in. So that will start happening in August. And we're currently raising awareness about it and recruiting right now. So that's one initiative that I have going on. We have the BCTF Divest Now campaign. And I'm out talking to people all the time and trying to get people out on the street demanding immediate change. Because it's, you know, I just really think that the adults of this world have created this mess, and we need to show the kids that we love them. And the only way we can show the children that we love them is by changing our societies so that we give them a future.
And I'd like to add to that, and that is that, because I agree with that 100%. And I'd like to add that I believe that divesting from fossil fuels is in fact an act of love. You know, to shift the perspective about the whole conversation about divesting is that, you know, let's get back to compassion. And in our humanity, everything about oil, coal, and gas is destructive. And so it's an act of love. Like Jillian Shipp said, a love for our children, all children, and a love for our planet.
Also, I want to acknowledge and honor Indigenous and First Nations peoples as custodians of most of planet Earth's biodiversity and bearers of ancient knowledge. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize all Indigenous and First Nations peoples' strength, resilience, and deep connection to nature. Thank you.